Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I am Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing.
Welcome back to Are You Quizzing Me? Today is a very special episode 61. Now, what makes this so special, apart from the fact that 61 is a prime number? Today, we are going to be doing a food special episode. So, all the questions and answers will be in some way, shape or form related to food. Before we get to the rest of today's episode, I'm going to be asking an audience question, which I will answer at the end of this episode. So, try and see if you can figure out the answer to this before we finish up this episode. You know, we do connect questions. Those are like Aditya's favorite type of questions. And I hate those. So I'm now going to distribute the pain to you, my audience. So tell me what's going to connect with the things that I'm about to mention. Almond eclair, aubergine envelope glue, baked bean farm dirt, banana lobster, belly button lint peppermint, bubblegum pumpkin, buttered popcorn pizza, chili powder prawn, dirt phlegm, dirty sock strawberry, dog food tutti frutti, and earthworm vomit. What connects all of these? I will reveal the answer to this question at the end of today's episode. We have a question, a not so serious one, which was asked by Aditya at the end of last week's episode. Aditya, welcome back to our episode. Why am I welcoming you? You're my co-host. But anyway, welcome back to our episode. And what's the answer for last week's episode?
Okay, so last week, the question I asked was, just as Cluedo is a play on the words clue and Ludo, what would it possibly be called if it had been originated in India? Cluedo was originated in the UK. What would be the possible names in India? So I was just making some lovely puns out of Indian famous games. And the first one would obviously be Carroom, because there are different rooms that the murder can happen in. Then there is Saboots and Ladders, like Chutes and Ladders, but Saboot. Then, of course, you could go with Killing Danda instead of Gilli Danda, because Danda can be a killing weapon in Cluedo. And the last one, very easy, Chor Police. But, of course, this is Khuni Police. And Chor Police is a classic Indian game that kids play. And today you get four answers instead of one. Wow. Such a great day.
You know, it's like those clearance sales or sales where you say, buy one, get three free, right? And usually they're like stuff that's been on the shelves for like decades and nobody's ever bought them. And now they're like just literally giving them away. Yeah.
Why do you think I signed up to do this podcast, Vineet? Do you think I care about trivia? I just needed a way to get this humor out of me once a week. That's basically the agenda.
Spread the pain. Okay. So now we've got that out of the way, let's get to our regularly scheduled programming of serious, very serious trivia questions. Aditya, why don't you start us off this week?
As I shall. So one of the most famous Michelin-starred restaurants in the US is the French Laundry. This is in Napa Valley in California. The chef and the owner of French Laundry is this gentleman called Thomas Keller. Thomas Keller has been credited with coming up with some very iconic dishes. I'm going to talk about one of his dishes today. Tell me, how was it represented in pop culture? Or how was it relevant to pop culture? So the name of this dish is based off of a Turkish dish called İmam Bayıldı, which is a stuffed eggplant. The dish itself, which I haven't named yet, and I'll tell you the name as a hint if you need it, differs from the original recipe by not frying the vegetables, removing peppers, and adding mushrooms. As per the recipe, a peperad is made of peeled, finely chopped, and reduced peppers, yellow onions, tomatoes, garlic, and herbs. This is spread thinly in a baking tray, and then you have zucchini, yellow squash, Japanese eggplant, Roma tomatoes placed on top of it, which is slowly baked for several hours. Do you know how this particular dish is represented in pop culture.
Is this a like a Thomas Keller version of a Ratatouille?
Man, come on. You can't crack it that quickly. I was really hoping you'd take a little bit more time. Okay, yeah.
You shouldn't have mentioned how it's prepared. Like, if you just gave me the recipe name, and I would have been stumped. I was stumped till then. But then you mentioned how it's prepared, and then I was like, okay, yeah, this is a ratatouille. You know that Spotify now transcribes the podcast, right? I wonder how it's going to do that. I'll have to put in a suggestion to record that and put that as angry mumbling.
Angry mumbling, yes. No, I'm impressed as always, because that was genuinely way faster than I imagined you'd crack it. But you're right. This recipe, do you know what it's called, by the way?
No, I don't. I mean, like, I just know from the presentation, I got the picture of a ratatouille. So I'm like, yeah, this is it.
Yeah, you are right. It is a ratatouille. But the recipe itself that Thomas Keller came up with is called confibialdi. Mm-hmm. And that is what the specific preparation is called, I guess. So that way of preparing it or presenting it, presenting ratatouille, is called confibialdi. And this happened when Thomas Keller was being shadowed at the French Laundry by Brad Lewis, the producer of Ratatouille. For 2 days, he shadowed him around the French Laundry. And Lewis asked Keller how he would cook ratatouille if the most famous food critic in the world were to visit his restaurant. That's when Keller decided that this particular preparation would be the way to go about it. And that's what we see in the movie. The Remy the Rat prepares it for the famous food critic, Ratatouille. Well done, Vineet.
Thank you. So let's move all the way from, I think it's California that the French don't visit, right? Let's move all the way from there to Korea. So before modern tea and coffee shops ruled Korea, people frequented places which were called X. Although the word X means tea or coffee house, they are different from like a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts or places like that. X are places that people can enjoy hot beverages while chatting with a hostess. The coffee shops also provided a coffee delivery service by motorbike. A pretty girl would deliver the coffee to businesses or homes. Now, this is not a concept that people would recognize in India, obviously, right? In many other countries in the world, apart from maybe Korea or Japan, this kind of service is not something that you would recognize. However, the name X is very well known in India, but for a completely different reason. So I'm going to leave it at that for now. Let's see if you can crack it. But
no, I have no clue altogether what this could be, because you didn't mention the context it is famous for in India, right?
Yes. So I'm going to now tell you the context. I was going to give you that anyway, but then I thought, let me just make it a little difficult for him. So the context that Indians know it isn't that of Bollywood. It's the name of a very huge blockbuster film.
It just happens to share the name, or is it intentionally
named? No, it just happens to share the name. It just happens to share. It's one of those things. Like, we can go into this whole thing where there is a lot of similarity between Indian languages and the Korean language. This may just be something that happened as a, you know, like we've talked about the Bambaram word for dog being dog. Mm. Similarly, we have the same thing, but it's a different meaning. It's just the pronunciation is the same.
Okay.
So in Korea, it means coffee or tea house, but in India, it means something completely different. And it's the name of a blockbuster Indian movie.
So because it's Korea, I would imagine it would be something along the lines of cha.
Let me just stop you right there. Don't even bother going down that rabbit hole.
Also nothing to do with that tea house kind of, okay. You said a Bollywood blockbuster, right?
Yeah, it was a huge blockbuster.
I mean, you said because it's also not necessarily a common etymology or anything. It just happens to be a word.
It's just a random coincidence.
Okay. It's going to take a wild guess to begin with. Is it Sholay by any chance?
No, it's not Sholay. Something more recent than that. Okay. So now I'm going to give you a couple of more clues. Okay. This should clarify it up a little bit. So the movie we are talking about is from 2010. Okay. And it was a directorial debut So the director of this movie, which we also know by the name X, is the younger brother of a much more famous director.
Is it Dabang?
Yes, it is Dabang.
Dabang is what they call a coffee shop or tea shop in Korea?
Yes, yes. They call them Dabang.
It sounds Korean. Now that I say it, it does sound Korean. Yeah, I can hear it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to clear things up a little bit, Dabangs are teas or coffee houses in Korea. In India, Dabang is a Hindi word which means fearless. And it was the name that was given to an action comedy film starring Salman Khan, which released in 2010, which was this huge, huge blockbuster hit. It was produced by Salman Khan's brother Arbaaz Khan. It had amazing songs. It was directed by Abhinav Kashyap, who is the younger brother of director Anurag Kashyap. And Anurag Kashyap had actually mentioned in an interview that it was a little embarrassing for him that he'd been in the industry for around 10 years by that point. The biggest film in their family was from his younger brother, who did it on his first try. While Anurag Kashyap's first film is not even released till now.
Love that. What a cool piece of trivia. And I don't know, maybe I'm just making up these connections in my head, but a tea shop is very much connected to cops in an Indian context. The bribes that cops take are apparently chai pani also. So,
oh, you've just spoiled a question. You literally just spoiled a question for me. One of the questions I was about to ask today was that in French, it is called a pot de vin, which is a glass of wine. In Syria, it's called finjan awa, which is a cup of coffee. In Portuguese, it's called gesoso, which is soft drink. In Hungarian, it is leken yerenzi, which is bread down. And in South Korea, it is called soju or Korean whiskey.
Oh.
What is it called in Hindi? It's supposed to be chai pani, which is drink slang for bribes.
Oh, wow. This is a common thing across the world. That's fun to know. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
Food is a great equalizer, I believe.
I guess, yes. Okay.
Your turn.
That was a pretty cool question. For my next question, I'm actually going to give you four requirements for a food item that Paul Logan specified. Paul Logan, obviously not a famous name in and of itself, but once you know the context, it'll make sense. So Logan had four requirements for this food item. First, that it should weigh 4 ounces. It should be high in food energy. It should be able to withstand high temperatures. And it should taste a little better than a boiled potato.
That's a very low bar.
Oh, I love that you said that.
Wait, what? That's a very low bar. Is it something to do with a chocolate bar or a protein bar?
Yes, it is. But do you want to try to take a guess as to specifically what kind?
Okay, is it a chocolate bar or is it a protein bar or an energy bar? What is it?
The former, chocolate bar.
Okay. To taste better than a boiled potato. All chocolates taste better than a boiled potato. Unless you're talking about 100% black chocolate, in which case it's a little too bitter. Wow. Is it a Kit Kat or something?
I said a little better than a boiled potato. Specifically, it should not be much better than a boiled potato.
Why is the boiled potato here? The chocolates and boiled potato. I'm just trying.
It's not connected to boiled potato specifically.
Okay.
It doesn't have to necessarily be related to boiled potato. The idea is that it should not taste amazing.
It should not taste amazing. A chocolate bar that does not taste... Is it kind of those MRE rations that soldiers eat?
I'll give it to you. You are right. It was the first chocolate ration bar that was commissioned by the Army Quartermaster, Colonel Paul Logan.
Oh,
and he approached Hershey's Chocolate in 1937 and gave these four requirements: that it should weigh 4 ounces, it should be basically lightweight, it should be very high in food energy value, it should be able to withstand high temperatures and taste just a little better than a boiled potato, which was basically to keep soldiers from eating their emergency rations in non-emergency situations. Because this was part of emergency rations.
Okay, that makes sense.
So it couldn't taste too good.
No, that makes sense. Because I was thinking the guy the guy is just mental. I mean, like, I know you're in the army, but you don't have to be a dick about it. But there is there's a rational reason behind.
It turns out it was actually not just terrible tasting. It was also called Hitler's secret weapon. The troops called it Hitler's secret weapon because of its effect on soldiers' intestinal tracts. It was that bad.
Oh God.
It could not be eaten at all by soldiers with poor dentition because it was terrible for your teeth. Oh. And even those with good teeth often had to shave slices off the bar with a knife before consuming it. So,
yeah. Wow. Okay, that was a good question. I'm going to give you something somewhat similar, at least in the same food category. According to one school of thought, the name is derived from the specialty liquor of this region, known as Schwarzwalder Kirsch, which is distilled from tart cherries. This is the ingredient that gives the dessert its distinctive cherry pit flavor and alcoholic content flavor. The confectioner Joseph Keller claimed to have invented Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte. So Schwarzwalder Kirsch is the liquor. And the thing that we are talking about has claimed to invented Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte in its present form in 1915 at the prominent Café Agner in Bad Godesberg, now a suburb of Bonn, about 500 kilometers north of the region X. This claim has, however, never been substantiated. The Tübingen city archivist Udo Rausch names the Tübingen master confectioner Erwin Hildebrand of Café Waltz as in Tübingen as the inventor, dated spring 1930. Given that Keller's initial recipe was not identical to the most popular interpretation of the dessert, but instead a simple version, it could be theorized that both confectioners influenced its creation. I want you to identify this dessert which is named after this region from where Schwarzwalder Kirsch, the alcohol, comes from.
Sorry, which region did you say it comes from?
So the region is what I'm asking you about. I want you to tell me the name of the region.
So I'm assuming a region more specific because from the sounds of it, it sounds German. So you're looking for a specific region in Germany?
Yes.
That's not a very fair question. I don't know German regions that well.
Let me just point out some of the clues in this question so that I can guide you towards the question again. Right. So this dessert is named after this region X. Okay. X has a specialty liquor called Schwarzwalder Kirsch. I can see the smile on your face. Now tell me.
Before you proceed, it's a region in Germany. It had something to do with alcohol. And did you mention cherries? Did you mention?
Yes. So the alcohol is distilled from tart cherries.
Oh, okay. Then it's definitely Black Forest.
Yeah, yes, it is the Black Forest cake. I didn't know it was called Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte.
Yeah, that part I don't think anybody who doesn't speak German probably knows. But yeah, this is Black Forest region in Germany is what the Black Forest cake is named after. That part I knew. Cool. Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte. Ooh, that's a mouthful.
It sounds better also than Black Forest cake.
Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte sounds better?
Yeah, it sounds like it's something, you know, something substantial.
You sound like, I don't know if you've seen that episode of Friends where Ross has to bring a detergent which sounds very manly. Because he does not
want to go with something. The laundry detergent. Yeah, it's German.
Yeah, it goes with German laundry also over there. Okay.
Uberweiss. I think it was called Uberweiss, right?
Uberweiss, yep. Moving from Ross, in fact, to another fictional character. So I'm not going to tell you the name of the fictional character. Let's call this character X for now. But I'm going to tell you the names of this character's relatives. Okay? So their mother, Nana, father, Cole, brother, Castor, Castor's estranged wife, Celinda, nieces Diesel and Violet, uncles Otto and Lubri. Who is this fictional character that I speak of?
Is it like a cereal mascot? Or like a food mascot of some sort?
No.
So we're not talking about Count Chocula or anybody like that, right?
No.
Is it Boomer from the Boomer Bubblegum?
Oh, that is a great guess, but no.
And I'll need a clue. I will need a clue. This is I have no context for this.
Okay. I think I stopped at the uncles Otto and Lubri.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about the cousin, Sutra, who's a sultry blonde, and a distant relative who was an extremely wealthy corporate magnate called Standard.
Is it Ronald McDonald? Have they made like an entire family for Ronald McDonald?
No. Okay, I'll tell you specifically. This is from the world of film and TV.
But somehow related to food.
The relationship will be made clear very soon. But
evil man. Okay. Wow. Okay, film and TV, that opens it up quite a bit. I was focusing on these kind of fictional characters and things that they've created. So, okay, so it's not a food mascot or a character that they've created to promote food. It's film and TV. Nana, Leo, Ubrick.
Okay, so the person themselves, the character themselves, I'll tell you, I wasn't giving you the gender as well. It's a woman. The woman herself,
okay,
is not directly got anything to do with food. The connection to food will be made apparent eventually. But for now, I would suggest trying to think of... Okay, so here's what I'd suggest for now. You probably go along the lines of thinking of what the last name of these characters is.
I'm guessing these characters don't appear, or they appear off screen or something like that.
Some of them have made brief appearances. Some of them have made recurring appearances.
Wow. Then I'm completely stumped.
I think you might need a little bit more of a hint. So I'm going to tell you that this character first appeared in a comic strip and eventually appeared in an animated series.
Is this Lucy from Peanuts?
No.
Shit. That was a good guess though. Peanuts and Lucy. Okay, no.
Okay, I'll give you the hint that I gave earlier. I'll repeat it actually. Think about what the last name for these characters is.
Okay, tell me the names again. Let me go through the names again.
Character X's mother is Nana. Father is Cole. Brother is Castor. Estranged wife of Castor is Celinda. Nieces Diesel and Violet. Two uncles, Otto and Lubri. And then there was a cousin, Sutra, and a distant relative who was an extremely wealthy corporate magnate called Standard.
I don't know, man. Seriously, just put me out of my misery. I have no clue what this is.
One last clue, just in case you know this particular piece of trivia. The comic strip was initially called Thimble Theatre and was renamed after its most popular character eventually. But initially, it was called Thimble Theatre.
Oh, dude, this is going to be something so easy. Okay, tell me again. My apologies to the audience who's frustrated right now listening to me just, stumble in the dark. But I'm not able to get
this. This is a tricky one. I don't blame you. But okay, let me do this one last time. Mother, Nana. Father, Cole. Brother, Castor. Estranged wife of Castor, Celinda. Nieces, Diesel and Violet. Uncles Otto and Lubri Kent, and a cousin Sutra, distant relative, was an extremely wealthy corporate magnate, Standard.
Oil? Standard Oil, magnate. Lubricant Oil.
Yes. Which comic strip character has the last name Oil?
Oh God, this is olive oil. Popeye. Spinach. Oh!
Olive oil is the answer. Yes, olive oil is the answer. Olive oil, the character is obviously named after olive oil, which is used in cooking and salads and whatnot. Brother, Castor Oil. And mother was Nana Oil, which was how banana or the slang for banana oil would be Nana Oil back in when it was created, early 20th century. And then father, Coal Oil, like coal oil. And Celinda Oil, I guess, which is
I did. I'm not sure. I have no clue what that
is.
I got it from lubricant and standard oil.
Yeah, diesel oil being the niece, and your Sutra oil and standard oil. Yes, as you very correctly cracked. And that's how Olive Oil and her family gets
Let's be fair. There is no cracked in this. There is no cracked in this, right? You literally put this it in front of my feet so that while I'm stumbling in the dark, I'd stumble over the right question, right answer.
No, you did do a decent job of it. I'd give you credit because this was a tough one.
No, well, in my defense, I've only ever watched the cartoons. I've never actually read any of the Popeye comics. And I don't remember any of Olive Oil's relatives showing up in the cartoon. So that's my defense and I'm sticking to it.
Fair enough. That's a valid defense. I'll give it to you.
Okay. Let me take you back a little bit in history. Time period is not significant, right? You just have to crack the funda, so to speak. Ernest Hamwi, that's Hamwi, participated in the St. Louis World Fair where he was selling waffle-like pastries called eggs. Okay? His neighbor was selling ice cream and soon ran out of plates. So to help him, he made cones out of eggs that could contain the ice cream. This soon became a hit with customers and now ice cream is incomplete without an ice cream or waffle cone. Now, what is surprising for people like us, or what we don't or may not know, is that X is actually an ancestor of a sweet that is very commonly known to Indians called Y. I want you to identify what Y is, and obviously bonus and bragging points if you know what X is.
Could you repeat what X was? Sorry.
So X is the waffle-like pastry from which ice cream cones were made. So Ernest Hamwi was selling waffle-like pastries called X at the St. Louis Fair. His neighbor was selling ice cream, ran out of plates. This guy helped him out by making cones of it. Now, what most people don't know is that X is an ancestor of a particular sweet that's very commonly known in India.
So X is the original version or the older version?
Yes.
And Y is,
yes, yes. Let me just give you a clue up front. It is the family of it is somewhat the same, but it has differed quite a bit. So you may not be able to imagine it by thinking of waffle-like pastries.
Is X by any chance, let's start with that, is X by any chance Stroop waffles?
No.
Waffle-like pastry. Can't think of many examples that would fit that. Trying to think of anything which has even a slightly similar shape or form as a waffle.
That's what I'm telling you. Don't think of it that way.
Okay. Would I get any closer by... Would I be anywhere close if I said something like jalebi?
Oh, you are insert angry mumbling here. Yes, why is indeed the jalebi? The waffle-like pastries.
Oh, wow, okay.
It was like a fried waffle-like pastry. It's not the kind of thing we know. It's like, so these are all families of types of funnel cakes that have been around the Middle East. So the X was called Zalabis. Zalabis. It was called Zalabis. It's one of the older ancestors of what we today now know as jalebis. Did you know that jalebis are not... I mean, like, everybody thinks of India when you're talking about jalebis. Mostly thanks to Indian sweet shops all around the world and the song Jalebi Baby. Obviously, Pakistan also has jalebis. In Nepal, it's called Jerry, which was a word derived from the Mughal Emperor Jahangir. In West Asia, it's known as Zalebia, Lokhma, Bamiya. In Iran, it's called Zulbia. In Azerbaijan, it is Zulbia, Zilvia. And in Arab countries, in the area of the Levant, they start to change shape and the recipes also kind of start to differ. But they are called Zalabia, Zalabia. And in Africa, North Africa, it's Zlebia. By the time you reach to Ethiopia, it is Mushabak. So... There are a lot of versions, all of them kind of fried funnel cake kind of things, which originally started as waffles sometimes in the mists of history.
Okay. Very cool. Wow. That is actually a very cool piece of trivia. Okay. Let's move from that lovely question to another one which has, I guess, global ramifications. mm-hmm. are definitely known across the globe. This particular album by a famous pop group got its name in an interesting way. So I'm going to tell you how it got its name. Tell me what the name is.
Okay.
I'm going to quote one of the band members here when he says, "I was on a plane with our roadie and we were eating. The roadie said, 'Can you pass dash?' I thought he said dash." And that's how the name of the album came to be. So the first dash, let's say X, was what the roadie asked to be passed. And okay. what the band member heard was Y. And that's how the album got its name. So tell me what X and Y are.
Oh, God. This is an album that's named after food.
You could say that, yes.
Oh, okay. Now that's a little difficult. What would you ask somebody to pass?
But let me specify. It's not exactly named after food as much okay. as something slightly misheard. Because, again, I repeat, I was on a plane with our roadie and we were eating. And he said, dash, can you pass the dash? Okay. I thought he said dash, which was the actual name of the album. So, can you pass the X? I thought he said Y. Y is the name of the album. So, tell me what X and Y are.
When you're eating, you say, pass the salt. Or...
You are very, very close.
Okay, what else would... So, you say, pass the salt, and this guy heard... Like, how can he mishear salt?
It wasn't just salt.
Pepper. Pass the salt and pepper.
X is salt and pepper, yeah.
X is salt and pepper. Okay, so he misheard salt and pepper as... Salt and pepper, salt and pepper, salt and pepper, salt and pepper. I'm trying to mishear salt and pepper from myself now.
Maybe try it in different accents.
So, pepper. No?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
I can hear it because I know the answer. I know the answer, so I can hear it.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Salt and pepper.
Salt and. Oh, Sergeant Pepper. This is the Beatles album.
It is Sergeant Pepper, the Beatles album. Yes, that's how the name came to be. Because Paul McCartney misheard Salt and Pepper as being Sergeant Pepper. I also wonder what the accent would have been for that to have been.
Liverpool, right? They would have been into Lilliputlian. I think it's called a Lilliputlian accent, which I'm not good at. So
yeah, but
I'm
not even good. Roadie could have been from anywhere. So I don't
know. Oh, true. That's true. Yeah, but we're not talking.
In any case, he heard it as Sergeant Pepper. And the more he thought about it, he thought it was a cool name for a character. And that's how Sergeant Pepper, the album, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was formed.
Yeah.
Beatles' most celebrated album, some would argue.
Okay. That's a nice question. I'm a little disturbed I didn't get that quicker because I had the pepper portion of it and I just would have... Okay. Fair enough. So now let me move to ask you a question about something completely different, right? The introduction of this recipe is attributed to Captain Henry Lewis Edwards. Edwards was a veteran of the Napoleonic Wars and held the position of Deputy Lieutenant of Carmarthenshire. He is believed to have brought the recipe home after travels in India. Okay? We don't know exactly how the recipe found its way to two certain individuals.
Okay.
They mixed it in their pharmacy and the resultant product was so strong that it was considered inedible and the barrel that they had made it in was abandoned in the basement. A few years later, they wanted to make space in the storage area. So the chemists came upon that barrel and before discarding it, they decided to try it again. Now they found that the sauce had fermented and mellowed and it was now palatable. What is this the origin story of?
And you said two individuals, right?
Yes, two individuals. They had a pharmacy. Like or a chemist shop or whatever you want to call it. We don't know how exactly the recipe... This is a kind of an apocryphal story, but Captain Henry Louis Edwards is supposed to have brought the recipe home after his travels from India. It somehow made its way into the hands of these two individuals who ran a pharmacy. They mixed it together, but it was so strong, it was inedible, so that they sealed up the barrel, put it in the basement. Few years later, they came up off the barrel again, and before throwing it out, they just tried it before they threw it out. And then they found that it had fermented, it had mellowed, and it was now palatable. And so then they released it to the general public, and now it is very famous. So what is this the origin story of?
Did you give me a time frame?
I did not give you a time frame, but I will now. It is 1800s. 1838 is when it was first released to the general public.
1838. So I was initially thinking some sort of a soft drink, but that seems a bit early for any of our famous fizzy drinks.
They basically found fermented, that right? after a few years, yes, after a few years, it had fermented, it had mellowed, and was now palatable. And the first bottles of it were released in 1838 to the general public.
This can't be a kombucha or something, right?
No, I think that's Japanese, right? Kombucha is Japanese, right?
I'm also not sure. Okay. Is it some sort of a tea?
No, it is not.
No, I'll need any hint you could give me.
Okay, so my hint to you is that this is notoriously difficult to pronounce.
Worcestershire sauce?
Yes, it is Worcestershire sauce. Worcestershire.
Worcestershire. Oh my god, I'm not even gonna try. Yeah.
Yeah. So the two individuals, the reason I did not give the name was because they formed the most famous brand of Worcestershire sauce called Lee and Perrins. So it was John Wheely Lee and William Henry Perrins. So you still get, I actually have a bottle of Lee and Perrins Worcestershire sauce in my fridge right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's Lee and Perrins, which is why I did not give you the name. Now, what I'm really surprised when I couldn't find it, was what recipe did he bring from India that had anchovies and fish and everything? Was it some kind of pickled recipe that they were like, oh, we don't have those recipe ingredients, so we'll use our own or something?
Yeah, these are so difficult to crack because people end up with such a different product from where it started. So you can't even tell where it potentially would have begun from. But yeah, no clue whatsoever. Very interesting.
Okay, so that looks like the end of today's episode as far as it comes to the questions. We have to now start winding up. We still have a lot to do before we leave you. So Aditya, what's your question for this week?
So the question for this week is, just like Dabang is named after some, was accidentally named after, I guess, some sort of a food-related connect there. What other movies have accidentally been named after food connections? This will be a series of puns that will be tough to swallow.
Oh, but God. No.
I promise you.
Leave it for next week. Leave it for next week. I can't tolerate it now.
A lot of food for thought for you.
Oh, no. Please, people. Okay. I would actually request that our audience also send in puns. Something that will make him wince, because it cannot be a one-way street, people. He cannot just keep inflicting pain on us and we do nothing. So rise, revolt, send emails to Aditya with puns.
You are only strengthening me. Please send me all the puns and I promise you, I will read out the worst of the lot. They will be part of our next episode. Any food-related puns which relate to movie titles, send it to me.
Okay, so that you have your question for next week, people. As with regards to the question I asked at the beginning of today's episode, what is the connect between the following? Almond eclair, aubergine envelope glue, baked bean farm dirt, banana lobster, belly button lint peppermint, bubble gum pumpkin, buttered popcorn pizza, chili powder prawn, dirt phlegm, dirty sock strawberry, dog food tutti frutti, and earthworm vomit. Aditya, do you have any idea what I was talking about? What the connect is?
Oh, this is the food that was served in my hostel. All of my hostel food is... These are the recipes that they used. No, this has probably something to do with it sounds like that Harry Potter thing, the Bertie Bott's every flavored candy. I'm guessing it is some real life version of that.
No, I mean, like, these are the flavors of Bertie Bott's every flavor beans. Every flavor beans.
Oh, okay.
Bertie Bott's every flavor beans.
Okay.
So, before we again wind up, Aditya, what's your pop culture recommendation for this week?
I'll keep my pop culture recommendations related to food. And these are some of the most famous food-related, I guess, movies, or at least food featured prominently in these. I actually did a dinner party a couple of years ago where I invited friends over. And I created all of these dishes just as, you know, to celebrate movies and food. So this was actually a very fun episode for me. Thank you, Vineet. So there is The Lunchbox. We mentioned Irfan Khan in our last episode.
Yes.
Irfan Khan.
Nimrod Kaur.
Had a stupendous performance in the movie The Lunchbox, which featured koftas. And Irfan Khan's character falls in love with the koftas that are in the lunchbox that he finds or he encounters. So check out Lunchbox, great film. Chef, a phenomenal film and just a fun film to watch. I think it can be a comfort movie. It is literally comfort food for you, at least for me. So yeah, check that one out. I remember Inglourious Basterds as having a very iconic scene. With a pie where they're waiting for some cream to be served. It's one of the most tense scenes, one of the best scenes in film history, I would say. So check that one out. There is obviously The Big Lebowski, which features the White Russian. I didn't do any drink questions, but there is a White Russian which is featured prominently through The Big Lebowski. That's worth checking out. Parasite. Parasite has a very interesting scene, and we have done a question related to Parasite and the noodles that are featured in it. So,
yeah,
because they do a very nice juxtaposition of a very cheap brand of noodles along with a very expensive steak. And that's pretty much how the movie plays out as well, the juxtaposition of wealth and poverty. And the last one that I would say is Ratatouille, which we already covered in this episode as well. Ratatouille, great film. And features food very prominently. A bonus recommendation, since Vineet mentioned, I don't know how you're going to find it, but if you can, Paanch, the Anurag Kashyap film that has not been released.
Nothing to do with food.
it does have something to do with food, Vineet. If you remember one of our earlier episodes, the word punch comes from
Paanch. Oh, yes, punch comes from Paanch. Oh, yes, I'd forgotten that, yeah.
Five ingredients, yes. So paanch, which Vineet somehow randomly came across today, comes from the Hindi word paanch, gives its name to the drink punch because it used to have five ingredients classically. And that's how it came to be. So there's a bunch of recommendations. And the next time we do this, and hopefully we do this again very soon, I'm going to give some restaurant recommendations because I feel like we should do that as part of pop culture as well. At least in famous cities. Yeah. So maybe if you're in a Mumbai or a Delhi or Goa or wherever else that we have. And Vineet has some fantastic recommendations. I can attest to that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll do that.
Okay. So my pop culture recommendation for this week, unfortunately, does not involve food. Because there's something I'm very excited about, which I want to introduce all of you to. There is an author by the name of Benjamin Stevenson. Okay, I came across him because I found a couple of mentions about Benjamin Stevenson on a few Instagram posts from people who do book clubs. And they had mentioned that he has this amazing novel, it was all fine. I was like, and then I came to the book that has completely blown me away. It's called Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone.
Okay.
So now, first of all, this name itself should tell you this is something very different from your usual fare. I've been reading murder mysteries for decades now. And it is very difficult, in my opinion, to have a truly original murder mystery. I was most happy and surprised when Knives Out came out, because it turned the murder mystery trope on its head. This book takes that kind of a concept, and in my mind, it's like a magic trick that I once saw Penn and Teller perform. There's this very old magic trick called Cups and Balls, right, where they have three cups and the balls keep multiplying and you don't know how it's done. So Penn and Teller once did that same trick with clear plastic cups. So you can actually see the trick while it's happening and you're still astonished because of the amount of skill that goes into it. Now just imagine that magic trick and Knives Out kind of concept come together. It is delightful. It is a delightful read. Sleight of hand with language is very beautifully done. I hope I'm not hyping it up so much so that you'll be disappointed when you read it. But I'm frankly telling you, it is an amazing one. I bought its sequel, which is called Everyone on This Train is a Suspect. And it's on my reading list. It's going to be next. And apparently this very soon, the third book in the series is going to come out, which is called Everyone This Christmas Has a Secret. Now, if these two are anything like the first one, it should be a blast to read. But Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone by Benjamin Stevenson, that's my recommendation for this week. Please go read it before HBO makes into a series. I think HBO has already bought it and is on the way to make a series about it. So please read it before they make a series and just kind of... because I don't think you can translate it to film as well as it appears in the book.
That's a great recommendation. But since you did say that you should read it before you watch it, I will counter that by giving something which you should definitely watch. I don't think it's based on a book, not that I know of. So just that's the only way you can consume it. Go check out The Bear, since I missed out on that as a recommendation. One of the best TV shows in recent history, obviously based on food as well. Jeremy Allen White is a delight, is a treat for the eyes. And the food that they make is obviously a visual treat as well. So check out that show. And this book sounds very interesting, Vineet. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. And now I just remembered something which would kind of tie in murder mysteries with food is the show Hannibal, which has some of the most beautiful depictions of food I've ever seen on TV. So that's also another recommendation from us.
I've watched the supercuts of that food being prepared multiple times on YouTube. It is beautiful just to watch even those scenes. A little bit creepy considering that a lot of those food items are apparently cannibalistic and made from human meat.
Not a lot, all of them.
All of them? Okay, well, that kind of ruins it. But I think I'll still go watch it again. It is very beautiful.
Yeah.
Because we did our pop culture recommendations, I think it's a right time to give a shout out as well to Ashwin. Ashwin Maskarenhas, who set up our subreddit for us. And both Vineet and I were very excited about it. And then we got caught up in work and forgot to do anything on it. And Ashwin has been just an angel who has been doing it for us. And thank you, Ashwin.
Saint.
He has posted not just updates, but... Oh, okay. Saint Ashwin then. Yes. Who has posted not just the episode updates, but also the pop culture recommendations that we give in every episode. So it's a lovely list that you can go check out. And if you forget what names we have recommended, you can always go to our subreddit and see what Ashwin has posted. So thank you, Ashwin. And yeah, this brings us to Vineet's spiel at the end of each episode.
Yes. I should make you do one of these one day, just so that the people are surprised, you know. So that's all for this episode. Thank you guys for listening in. We hope you enjoyed the show and learned something new. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a review on whichever podcast platform you're listening to us on. Take 2 seconds after this spiel to go hit the notification button, subscribe to it so that you know when a new episode drops. It helps us reach a wider audience, allows more people to discover and enjoy the show. Please give us a 5-star rating. We'd also love to hear from you. Feedback, suggestions, trivia. If there are any questions you want asked on this podcast, just send us an email at areyouquizzingme@gmail.com with the name of the quiz master who you want to ask the question in the subject line. So if you want Aditya to ask the question, just say question for Aditya to ask or whatever. We'll figure it out. We'd also love to hear from you on Instagram. You can reach us at areyouquizzingme. We appreciate your support and look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future. Please join our subreddit, r/areyouquizzingme, and make it, a community right now. Ashwin's taking up a lot of the weight. We'll appreciate a lot of people. You can post things, trivia. You can post opinions about our pop culture recommendations, suggestions for our episodes. We do appreciate it, no matter how negative the feedback may be or positive. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again for tuning in, guys, and have a great day.
See you guys next week.